live righteously.
It's time for a very special episode of the Cultural Hall.
I left my day job early for this one today, so Nick Galletti, you should feel yourself pretty honored and special.
I am very special.
Yeah. It's Nick Galletti from the Good Word Podcast. You can find him online at thegoodwordpodcast.com, which is what I just did. And already, I need to let you know I have episode envy.
Oh?
In that your number is bigger than my number.
That's a false number.
Yeah?
I have the one in front to show that it's our first year.
Oh, it's boo. Really boo.
So it's really only like 52 episodes.
No, that's no good. That's cheating.
Well, I didn't know how many I was going to do per year. So it was either 1.5 or...
No, that's cheating. That's okay, what that is. Fair. What's wrong with the number? Like one. How many did I do that year?
I don't know. I don't know. I've seen other people do it that way. So I guess I was just a follower.
Okay. Shepherd or not being a shepherd.
That's true.
Being a sheep.
Yep.
Follower. So you're about a year into it then, I'm guessing.
Actually, we just started in January of this year.
So you don't... tell me a little bit about The Good Word.
Well, it originally came out because as a published author myself...
Well, okay. I'm getting a little more envious on this side.
But I published a book on the sacrament. It was very LDS heavy. It wasn't like a fiction book that could be sold anywhere else.
Oh, that fictional sacrament.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Well, the idea behind it was, great, now I've published a book, what do I do next? Mm-hmm. I didn't see any outlets where I could get promotion as an LDS author to an LDS audience. Mm-hmm. So eventually, the connection that I have with my publisher, who's Eborn Books, mm-hmm. and who has the big bookstore downtown and all that, we needed to figure out a way to promote their authors and other LDS authors. And so we kind of came up with this idea of having a podcast. I'm a sound engineer by trade, so the technical side of it, I already had the equipment and all that stuff.
Sure. Your equipment's better than this, isn't it?
Can I plead the fifth?
No, it is. It's okay. Your number's bigger, published author, better
radio
equipment.
Who knows? As long as it sounds good in the end.
Is that the truth?
What?
Because you're listening to it and you go, if he would just... Right?
No, it's not bad. Okay. I have to say that it's a step above most of what I've seen.
Right?
In the podcast
world. Yeah, we got six port or whatever those things are called. We got six of them things.
That's right. Yeah, so no, it's fun. I actually have podcast envy because you guys have like a crew of people that help and support your podcast.
Yeah.
And this is just me, you know. If I don't do it, nobody does it.
You will find really quickly, I would bet, that either you'll find people that will help you or you'll find yourself not wanting to do it anymore. that's where it came with in the first year for me, for sure. It was like...
Yeah, you were talking about that on a net recent episode I listened to.
Yeah, let's get some more people doing this, please.
Yeah.
Let's get somebody on board.
Well, it's certainly not for money or fame, right?
Right.
Kind of do it because you love it.
Only because you love it. If you do it for anything else, it's like, wait, I'm still waiting for that thing.
Yeah,
I'm still waiting for this other thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So the book about the sacrament, let's go back to that for a second. Because, like, is it like, hey, would you take the sacrament, this is what you think about? Or is it like, this is why the sacrament, like history of the sacrament? Or what it's
kind of a little bit of both. But really what it came from is, and I actually wrote this in my mission journal, which is where this kind of came from.
Where'd you serve?
The Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I think I was out about 20 months. I was out for a while, and I wrote in my journal this simple line of, I was studying the Tree of Life from Lehi's vision mm-hmm. of the Tree of Life. And I wrote in my journal, it seems like there's a comparison between the Tree of Life and the sacrament. I'm not sure what it is yet, but it sounds like something I should study. And so I think 10, 11 years later, after studying this for a long time, I came up with Tree of Sacrament, which is the name of the book. And so part of what it is it's the history, but it's retelling of the history of the sacrament in the sense of how it helps play into that metaphor and how the Tree of Life can help kind of teach us about how to get more out of the sacrament.
Hmm.
So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Pictures? Is it a picture book?
No.
No!
No, but it isn't big. It's probably like 120 pages. So
like a good Sunday read?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A couple hours if you're
big
fast.
Big words?
No. Well.
It's like one word per page.
Yeah, 12-point, double space.
Sacra.
Yeah, no. It's not that bad, but it's not exactly like some exhaustive, you know, doctrinal dissertation from like
I didn't understand. I'd be like, what?
Oh, no,
exhausted.
I mean, I'd like to think it kind of bridges the gap between what some people would call scholarly and what people would call devotional. So it's approachable, but it's not like dumbed down mm-hmm. so that there's not enough to it that it's worth reading. So hopefully it's kind of in between.
And it's called
Tree of Sacrament. You can actually go to treeofsacrament.com and learn a little bit more about it. So,
other website envy?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, right. So, it's just kind of a, it was my first, I never sought out to be an author, per se. It just kind of came that way. And, it just happened.
But I've studied, I mean, there's got to be something, because I've studied a lot of stuff, and I've never been like, you know what, I've studied this. Now I'm going to write a book about it.
Well, I think part of it was that I hadn't read it anywhere else.
Okay.
And so, you know, the sacrament for a lot of people is something that's very casual, or there's just not a lot of depth to it. And I think that was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd hear these things that said, oh, it's the most important thing that you do in Sunday. And it's there was even a quote from David O. McKay, I think, that said that it was the most sacred ordinance in the church almost, or in the Church of Christ, something like that. And I was like, really? Because I never really treated it that way.
Because that guy's playing with his iPad during
it. Exactly. And you know, the kids' Cheerios are all over the floor. But, yeah, so I guess I was trying to reconcile that a little in my head as to how those two could be true. But based on what I was seeing around me in church, mm-hmm. it didn't seem to correlate. So I tried to figure out how that could be.
You just want to stop and yell at people. Don't you understand how important this is? See this book?
Yeah, that's right. Read
It'll
this.
It'll change your life. For Mother's Day next year, I'll make it very affordable, and we can give all the mothers in the ward
get up on
a
the
copy
pulpit.
Of this book.
Because you're in the ward, you get 20% off. No, none of that. As a matter of fact, most of the people in the ward don't even know that I wrote it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just don't, you know, it's kind of hard to promote it in some ways just because you're like, I don't know. It seemed a little weird to promote that, but
it's super weird, like as far as all that. And I think that it's good that it's that way. But like going to church, I mean, there are people that listen to the Cultural Hall in my ward,
right?
But I refuse to allow them to reference me as the
guy
the guy who does it. Seriously, so they'll like. I think it was a couple of weeks ago in Elders Quorum, someone, you know, raised their hand and said, yeah, so I was listening recently on a Mormon podcast, it's called The Cultural Hall, and the people who were in on it started chuckling, and I was just like, oh, I've heard that's good, and then just kind of left it there, but, you know, that promotion within church seems weird.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to reconcile why that's okay.
Yeah.
Even though you're promoting a church thing, you're trying to teach things that you think have value in their life, but yeah, to bring it up. Like, because I'm a gospel doctrine teacher, and when we have the thing on, you know, a lesson on the sacrament,
mm-hmm.
you know, do you go, do I quote my book?
Yeah.
Or is that, like, really egotistical?
A wise author once said, I mean, yeah, but you're like, well, it's said best.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I like how this guy said it.
Oh, yeah, who was that? Gladi.
But, yes, I don't stick it in front of the podium in class or anything.
On top of the doily, here it is.
Yeah, the doily's so universal, too.
Yes.
There's doilies everywhere.
Even in Elders Quorum, but not necessarily.
Not all of them.
Yeah. I wish. I want to talk about this. So, Good Word, you're like with the publisher then. So, this is kind of backed by someone?
Not really. My publisher also has a bookstore.
Okay.
And it actually used to be the old Sam Weller's bookstore downtown.
Mm-hmm. In downtown Salt Lake.
Downtown Salt Lake City. And it's, you know, this 30,000 square foot bookstore, and it really is kind of, you know, you've got Deseret Book, which is the, you know, the big kind of, I don't want to call it the Walmart of Mormon books, but
it's the Walmart of Mormon books.
It's the biggest thing. It's what a lot of people go to and look at. But here's this 30,000 square foot place where independent voices can come in, the people that either Deseret Book didn't want to or couldn't publish for whatever reason. And
too edgy for Deseret Book.
Well, I don't know. Maybe edgy is the right word, but it's just, you know, they just felt like they didn't want to publish it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's this idea that anything that's published by Deseret Book must somehow be doctrine just because of their connection to the church. So I think there's a lot of things that they don't publish but
because
would
they,
like to.
Exactly.
So anyway, but we had this, you know, this location, and it's this old bookstore, 1905, I think, is when the building was built. And there's all these little cave areas and hallways and kind of weird nooks. And so we said, well, let's just do this podcast where these authors that, you know, write a fiction book or a history book, biography, whatever. But if they're LDS, whether they write on something LDS or not, if they are LDS, then let's give them a voice.
Hmm.
And so they come do our show. And then after the show, they go downstairs book signing.
Cool.
So that's kind of, you know, it's meant to be a platform for Mormon authors, for LDS authors, whatever they do.
So is it, tell me a little bit about how it's set up. Is it just straight shot, half an hour, it's always 15 minutes, goes tell you, just are like, man, I can't take this anymore?
Well, it depends on the subject, the author, if I've gotten the book in advance. Because, like, sometimes if I've gotten the book in advance, I have a lot more I can talk about. Mm-hmm. Whereas sometimes when they're really short, it's like, so tell me about how you wrote this book.
And right.
It's kind of like, I wish I had a little bit more to go off of. But so it'll be anywhere between 15 minutes and 30 minutes is okay. Kind of how we shoot for. It's a little bit shorter. But we've had one that went an hour just because there was just so much to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's kind of the beauty of the podcast format. It's not so
No, it restricted. Has to be. It's rigid.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Free form.
So yeah. So it's probably 15 to 30 minutes. And we go with a brief bio on the author. And then we ask some questions about who they are, how they kind of approach the craft of writing. So, like, other writers kind of like the show because they get little hints and tricks from other authors. And then we really kind of delve into whatever book they're kind of promoting at the time, and that, you know, changes.
Do you talk at all about the people's individual, like, religiousness or religiosity?
Yes, good word.
Right?
George
I think
Bush.
I made that up.
Religious. Anyway, it's
you
kind
can throw
of
it in there. Throw the osity in there.
Religiosity or I don't yeah. know. But no, it comes up if that's relevant to the uh-huh. subject. Like, sometimes we'll have a fiction author and they'll throw in a character that's Mormon, and mm-hmm. There's no real reason why they're Mormon other than just because they know it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I'll ask them, you know, did you throw that in because you feel like compelled as a Mormon to include a Mormon person? Or
yes, I do.
Yeah, yes. And some people, you know, I've even asked, do you find that being Mormon is liberating as an author, or is it more constrictive? And so there are some ways that we relate it back to how they write. I think when you're dealing with someone's personal, like, there was an author we interviewed who's 34, 33 and single, and she wrote a book about how to be happy and single and Mormonism, essentially. And mm-hmm. and so a lot of that was talking about her own personal experience.
Sure.
And how that played into the book. So yeah, it'll come up. But it's not meant to be quote unquote a faith promoting show. That may happen, but it's more to just kind of talk about the authors and get to know them.
Cool. Are there any authors in particular that you're like, oh man, I love this LDS author, people should be looking for? Because I know I think of, as I sit here, I think people probably already know Stephanie Hale, and I think probably people already know you got your Chris Heimerdinger.
Right.
And your James Dashner.
So far, those are three names actually I haven't approached, and part of the reason that I don't want to say I avoid some of the more common names is that may be a story that's already been told.
Well, and that's the thing is those are people that, you know, people go, yeah, that's the guy, and I know he's more. And also Stephanie Meyer is one that I can't believe I didn't throw in there. But who are people that, like, if I'm listening to this going, all right, Good Word Podcast, I guess I made it this far. who are people that you could go, man, these are really talented
for
writers.
Their writing craft or for their topic?
No, for their writing craft.
There was, if you, well, see, and that just depends on what kind of books you like.
Yeah, throw a couple.
If you like fiction, mm-hmm. I would
say. We're talking young adult or are we talking adult fiction?
In a way, it could be both in this particular author. Her name is Tanya Parker Mills.
Okay.
She's not, like, super well known, but she, kind of in the Mormon writers community, she's very active and you know, she interviews a lot of authors herself. But she's got a really cool perspective because she was raised in the Middle East.
Oh, okay.
And yet she's a completely American family mm-hmm. because her father was in the military. And so she brings a unique perspective to fiction writing within the LDS kind mm-hmm. of world. But it's not also so LDS that you feel like you're reading, I don't know,
scripture.
Well, yeah, in essence, yeah. So I would say that someone like Tanya Parker Mills, and again, the reason I mention her is because she's really good. She's actually won national awards for what she writes, but by and large, not a lot of people know her. At least not enough people know her.
I've never heard the name. So
right, she's on a lesser well known published, you know, or a publisher, and I think that might be part of it, but I think that's part of what I like about doing the show is that I've been able to meet and kind of associate with authors that are fully talented, you know, every bit as good, if not better, than some of these names that you may have mentioned.
Sure.
But it's just nobody's heard of them.
Right.
So there's, as far as, like, nonfiction goes, I'm more of a nonfiction guy.
Nerd.
Yeah, total. Total gospel nerd. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I
Wait, so what gets you nerdy? What gets you nerdy?
Well,
like for me, it's church history. I'm talking like 1825 to
church history.
44. That's my
nerdiness.
I'm
more doctrine, scripture kind of stuff, and so that's kind of my
super
nerdism.
Nerdy.
Yeah, kind of nerdy. Like I love the idea of going and reading of someone that's found a book on the atonement that brings me a whole new perspective.
Okay.
But not in a way where it's, I repented of my sins and this is how I felt afterwards. It's much more into the teachings and the quotes and the doctrines and things like that. So yeah, that's where I kind of power nerd myself into things. Yeah. So anyway.
And is there someone you recommend as far as that goes? Someone that if they're listening to this going, man, I'm like Nick. I'm not like Richie. I'm like Nick.
Well, if you want like super power nerd, and you'd hate that I would say this about his books, but there's a book by LeGrand L. Baker.
Okay. LeGrand is Mormon, huh? That surprises me.
Yeah, really, right? He wrote a book called Who Shall Ascend into the Hill of the Lord. It's 1,500 pages,
oh,
which is much bigger than most books that I read.
Yeah.
But it is an incredibly rich text that you could read like 20 times and probably not get everything out of it.
I don't think I could read it one time. You said 1,500 pages. Yeah. Is that big font?
No.
Oh, no.
No, it's not. It's footnoted. That's what I mean. Like, it's like if you're into the power nerd gospel doctrine, it is probably one of the richest, deepest books out there. That's if you're into that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if that's really what you want to delve into. I can bring up one particular book, a guy by the name of, there's actually two of them. The last names are Reber and Moody. They wrote a book called Are We Special?
Okay.
And it's actually published by Deseret Book, but they're two psychologists, social worker kind of people.
Okay.
And they talk about how we as Mormons often look at ourselves as really special
we
people.
We are.
And we are in certain ways.
No, we're all in, we are in always.
In always. We're perfect.
Yeah. No, not perfect. Special.
Special.
Two very different things.
There's a short bus version of that, I'm sure. But
yeah.
The idea of their book is that there's actually quadrants of people and how you can categorize yourself where, and I don't need to go into it, but
yeah.
It's a really cool, it's actually a very applicable book for average people. And I think actually a lot of your listeners would be interested in it. So it's a book you should check out.
And it's called what again?
Are We Special?
Are We Special?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
It's actually pretty cool. It's very approachable. It's not
Reber and Moody.
Yes.
That's a great combo of writing team. Yeah. I'm Reber and Moody.
Yes.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
So you've been doing this a year. What have you liked so far? What have you learned? What have you said? Boy, that was something I wouldn't do again.
Oh, well, shoot. There's a lot that you can learn. I mean, I've learned some things, even technical. I mean, there's a lot that you can go into. But I think what I've learned, honestly, is that I went into looking at Mormon authors with a very narrow field of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like Mormon movies because you start to think that every LDS book is going to be just like Work in the Glory,
mm-hmm.
or every movie is just like, well, Work in the Glory.
Yeah.
But
wait a minute.
Or Singles Ward, you know, yeah. where there's this very two-dimensional perception of what people can write. And I've really learned that there is a lot more out there that people can read. So if you've got, you know, 10, 20 bucks to spend on a book, maybe you should look at one of these authors. Maybe there's something of value to one of these people. Just because they're not, you know, Stephanie Meyer,
mm-hmm.
and sold millions of copies doesn't mean that their book sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's true. I mean, everybody, there's not going to be, just because they're LDS, they're good.
Yeah.
And there are some stinky
but
ones.
But they are special.
They are special. But yeah, so I guess I've learned that there's quite a bit more to LDS authorship and writing than I thought there was.
Hmm.
And I'm happy for that, because I'd like to think that the culture I belong to isn't void of talent,
right,
in that area. You know,
The other thing that I think of as far as all these LDS authors go, and actually we mentioned this in an upcoming episode, is I swear there's got to be a secret guild of all these LDS writers who are working now to take over the world. Seriously.
Which LDS authors would you include in that?
I can't say for fear of retribution, but I swear there's probably like a dozen that are like, we're going to take over mainstream media.
There you
with
go.
With our, you know, all these
I
kind
can
of
think
things.
Of a few things you're probably,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, and I happen to be LDS. Flames behind
rubbing
you.
Rubbing their hands together. Yeah.
But as far as the good word too, I think that you hit on something that I think is pretty cool, where it's something that I pride myself with here in the Cultural Hall too, is kind of the lending voice to things that don't get voices too often. And so I bet it's probably pretty cool for you to feel like you're kind of breaking these authors out to people.
In a way. Well, yeah. I mean, like, let's take this interview, for example. I'm kind of a nobody, but thank you for having me on.
Nah, it's a pleasure.
So, we have to get into my little treat I brought for you as my thank you. But yeah, it's kind of like I come from that era where you're, or that area where you're just like, I'm kind of a nobody. I think I have something that's worth saying, mm-hmm. so I should deserve a chance to get that message out there. So that's the same idea with the show.
Yeah, I think that's very valuable.
Yeah.
Now I can't help but think of anything but that treats that you've got here. So
okay. Well, you're not allergic to anything?
Not that I know of.
Okay. I'm a foodie.
Okay.
Big time foodie.
I cannot wait for whatever this is.
So
he brought a mysterious bag into the room where we're recording this.
It is homemade chocolate ice cream.
Oh my gosh.
With chocolate chips.
Oh my gosh.
And I just made it this morning, so it's just like perfectly soft.
Oh yeah.
But it's,
I don't have a freezer to put this in. I guess I'll have to eat it.
You have to eat it now. But it's yeah, we make homemade ice cream at our house.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
Yeah.
That is not fat-free.
No, it is not. I choose to enjoy my calories.
Now, let's get nerdy about this for a second.
All right, nerd out.
I don't think that this is ice cream. Is this more of a gelato, technically?
You know, it's egg-based, custard kind of base.
Okay.
So, yeah, and that goes back to a little bit of my Italian heritage, that it's mm-hmm. super creamy and yummy.
Semi-sweet chocolate chips.
Yes.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Mm, that's really good.
Yeah.
I feel too bad that I'm going to have to eat all this in front of you right now.
It's all right. Mm. I can make more at home. I mean, we make guava ice cream. We make any kind. I mean, we just go nuts on it. So
I'm making avocado. Let me have you put the lid back on that. I'll eat the rest of that in a minute.
Avocado?
Avocado ice cream. You ever had that before?
You know what? I actually, because I travel a lot with my day job, there was actually a place in Washington, D.C., Mexican restaurant that was
touting the avocado ice cream.
I left before they could serve it. Like, it was like an event that they were showcasing. Is it good? Have you had it?
I have not yet.
Okay.
But there's a lot of people who...
it's supposed to be better for you.
Yeah, because you know, you got the omega-3s or whatever.
Yeah, that's what they say.
But the other part of it is that avocados are naturally creamy,
yeah.
so you don't have to put in as much cream as you would in that. That, to me, tastes like I'm eating...
butter?
It's so good. Yeah, it tastes like I'm eating chocolate butter and heavy whipping cream, and I love every bit of it. Man, I just want to eat that.
I'll keep going. I don't care.
But this has to continue on. I'll get to that
fair
in
enough.
A minute.
It's not good radio.
You'll have to share the recipe, too. We'll associate it with this episode.
Yeah, you bet.
Is that cool?
I'll give it away. Yeah.
Nice. But for missionaries, this is where the idea came from, because my home teacher talks about how down in Brazil, they use avocados for lots of desserts.
I could see that.
Like, absolutely. They'll have avocado shakes and stuff like that. And to me, I look at it and go,
yeah.
No, thank you. We've incorporated it into like green smoothies and stuff in my house.
Are you healthy? Are you a health nut?
Except for that I love stuff like that.
I'm
trying to be, but I love stuff like that too
gotcha.
Much. But I've incorporated it into like green smoothies and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know what? It's got to, there's it, you know, if a whole country, a whole, you know, continent loves this as a sweet thing, I've got to be able to figure it out.
Well, have you ever had balsamic vinegar on dessert?
Yes.
And if you get, you think if you try the one that you get at the grocery store, you're like, ugh, that's gross. But right. if you get one that's meant for desserts,
yes.
it's awesome.
Like a nice, yeah.
And yeah, super sweet.
We're going to get super food nerdy here.
Yeah, oh, bring it on.
If we're not careful. A little balsamic reduction to make it sweet so the bitter goes away.
Go.
And
yeah,
then
we'll sound like we're selling it on a menu.
Yeah. And you can purchase this all at theculturalhall.com. But I just think that I'm going to try that because of different people saying, yeah, you really got to try the...
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, too, because I think, was it Mexico that just overtook the United States as the fattest country or the most obese country? And it's funny because, actually, if you get into most of their cooking... It's not that bad for you.
No.
But they put in a lot of stuff that could be, like, depending on where you're at. And so it's like, there's always a good version of these things that are healthy for you. I didn't make this. I mean, the chocolate's like,
and they're typically not that good.
But in this case, yeah, this ice cream is meant for fat.
I may have to have a little bit more while we're still talking. Let me ask you, a dude who cooks, are you married? You're married.
I'm married, 5 girls.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
How's that?
You know, my oldest is just now about to turn 11, and then it goes like 9, 5, 3, and 2. And the older two are starting to get to that time where...
Do you hate them?
Well, it's like, let's just say I've put on my calendar a set aside a week on my calendar of the get out of the house while you can week. because at some point I walk around the house going, what is going on? Why is everybody acting crazy?
Yeah. Is there crazy in this house right now?
Yeah.
We have radon? Is that what's going on? That is so good.
But yeah, so it's, I love them and it's great. It's a lot of fun. I wouldn't change it. Like people say, oh, are you going to try for a boy? No.
We're done. But, I can't handle if there was another girl, so we are done.
That's right. They said, when did you know you were going to have 5 when we had 4?
Yeah.
We knew we were done, and then oops. But yeah, so we have all these girls, and it's a challenge in some ways, but it's also been a real blessing because they've taught me so much. If I had boys, I would have kept on being a boy myself.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, they've shown me to grow up a little, which is not good or bad, whatever. But yeah, it's been great.
Does it worry you as a dad with how kids are growing up with girls?
In some ways, but I've got some pretty good girls, and my wife is a really good example for them. She's not like overbearing or anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's great. Like, it actually works out pretty okay. I trust them.
Yeah.
So.
That's recorded today when they're 11.
Yeah. What's going to happen in 10 years? Who knows? But.
What else am I missing? What else do you want to mention about the Good Word podcast? You can go to goodwordpodcast.com. I'm reading over just the different interviews. I like that you have a lot of it where I can just scroll down, whereas with the Cultural Hall, you have to click through different ones. Is there one that in particular is your favorite? Or if I'm only going to give you one chance
to listen to a podcast.
Here's one chance. I'm going to listen to one.
And to be honest, it's a little difficult because it depends on what kind of books you like. Because I could think that one interview is like a really great interview, but you're like, but I don't care about that subject. So, But I think that if I was to, let me see, I would be willing to say
that's
that
like
there was
you
one.
To pick a favorite kid, but everybody knows you have a favorite kid.
Well, I think that one that went really well, and I'm kind of proud of because it was our 5th episode.
Okay,
is one with an author that actually was on the Glenn Beck show nationally.
And
I don't. That's not how I heard about him. It was actually through his publisher. But his show, his interview, he was very engaging, and he kind of talked about a subject that I hadn't really heard approached before,
which was
he talked about a covenant that people make of that early leaders of America made, and and it talks about how this covenant relates back to freedom and all these different things, and you're kind of like, oh, that sounds a little kind of nutters,
but he went through the wagon. This guy's almost done with the interview,
but he was very articulate. He's a really cool guy because he works with he works in the Department of Homeland Security, where they're doing, I guess it's try to combat child not pornography, but like
sex trafficking
and stuff like that. And so he had some kind of cool perspectives and things that he shared. And I think, I was kind of proud of it because it was our fifth one and I was just getting my feet wet, but it came out really good. So if you like that subject matter, that's really good. And he did a good job with that. So, but even that Tanya Parker Mills, the episode, I think it was number 17. We call it 117 because we're cheating. But that one was, I think, was really good because she has an autistic kid and she wrote that into the story. And so it's really cool to get a perspective of someone who the main character discovered her son's autism and so did the author. And so I don't know, there's a really cool kind of story arc within the interview too. So I would recommend those two if you like one that likes fiction and one that likes history, and those are kind of the ways to go with it. But
you can get those all at goodwordpodcast.com. Yep. A couple other questions for you before I let you go. Number one is, you know, the call out to use the internet for good.
Yes.
Do you feel like you're fulfilling that, or do you feel like that's part?
Okay. In one way. I think that I do a lot on the internet. I guess a lot of people do. Like, I contribute on a blog called Real Intent, and I write stuff every now and again for that. And I hope that people are going to this podcast and are not just entertained, but they're introduced to something that's of value. So in a way, that's using the internet. I certainly, you know, don't think that this is a show that any mainstream radio station would pick up. So the fact that technology and the internet with podcasting is available means that a show like this could be available. So yeah, I guess in a way, in my own way.
Do you have a calling right now?
I do.
What is it?
I am gospel doctrine teacher. Have been for going on 4 years.
Do you have a favorite, like this year we're doing Doctrine and Covenants. Do you have a favorite?
I think I learned the most during the Book of Mormon year. And I love church history. I think that right now we're learning so much more is being opened up to us as a culture and a people about our church history.
For good, so, and for, oh my gosh, what?
Yeah, well, yeah. And you know, for me, it's like, wow, that's an interesting piece of history. It doesn't change my faith.
Yeah.
But for some people, it very much does. And I know that kind of faith crisis is kind of a, I don't want to call it the problem du jour, but it seems like right now there's a lot of that happening and being discussed. So the idea of having all this information is just, we're going through a period of assimilating that into our culture, and eventually it'll, you know, we'll come to terms with it.
Sure.
And so, yeah.
So you would say Book of Mormon.
Book of Mormon, probably.
If you could have any calling, made up or existent, what would you have?
My first love is music. And if there was a way...
Does your wife know?
Yeah. Yeah, we divorced when we got married.
I loved music so much, but it just wasn't working out. So then I found my wife and gave me five girls.
If there was a way to do recording music as part of a calling, I would love to do that. Like, that would be passionate for me. Mm-hmm. But in the real world, I think gospel doctrine teacher really is...
That's a thing
it fits
for
me. It really, my whole nerd side that we talked about, yeah, it totally comes out every Sunday I teach.
And people stay with you?
For the most part.
Good.
Yeah.
Because I've had a few like nerdy teachers and they're like, and I didn't get it. And you're just like you look around the room
going?
And it's like, there's not a single person paying attention right now.
No.
Or they just don't understand. Like, they're just looking at you going, beep, 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 beep.
No, I've had a few people, like, because I travel a lot with my day job, if you will, that they've come up to me when I come back after being off for a week or something. Oh, thank you. I'm glad you're back. And so I guess I get a positive response. They haven't released me after four years.
That's a long time too.
So yeah, I'm pretty much done the cycle of all four. If they keep me on another year, I'm going to be starting over again with, I think, Old Testament or something.
Yeah, then you're rolling pro into the OT.
Yeah, I'll just find my old lessons and no.
Let me just rehash this a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, but if there was a way to be if you could be called to be a sound engineer for church music that was not the usual cheesy church music, you know, Saturday's Warrior kind of cheesiness.
Although I love that stuff.
Well, to each his own. Yeah.
Who are these children coming down? You got to have a place for it. If you're going to have a place for everything else, you got to have a place for that. Finally, what's your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of the faith is essentially...
Of your faith. It doesn't necessarily have to be of the church. Of your personal
faith. My interpretation of the LDS Church's doctrines. I would be willing to say that the idea that we teach that everybody has the same potential and that potential is infinite. Hmm. The idea that I've even done sound for other churches and have of course, been exposed as a result to some of their teachings. And I just love the uniqueness of the LDS faith in the sense that, not that this idea of, oh, we're teaching people that they can become a god, because that always carries kind of a weird stigma to it. Yeah. So, but it, the idea that no matter where you're at, you can still achieve that same end. Hmm. And I guess I love the forgiveness aspect of it, but I love the enabling and empowering aspect of it too.
Well, I hope that this was everything that you wanted it to be.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed having you be here. That ice cream is amazing. So make sure you give me that recipe.
I will email it to you.
With this episode. We hope that this podcast and ice cream has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.